Hey, everybody, welcome in. Locked On Orioles Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. So this week, our AL East crossover episodes continue, so I wanted to get quickly right to that. Again, remember, we did record these episodes, including this one about the Blue Jays a couple weeks back, kind of pre-coronavirus becoming a real national pandemic, at least that it was admitted to be, and before sports getting canceled. So we were still thinking that opening day was going to be 6 days from now, which obviously is no longer the case. But still a Blue Jays crossover episode with AJ Andrews, the host of the Locked On Blue Jays podcast. We've had her here on the pod once before. The two of us kind of go back and forth looking at the Orioles and the Blue Jays. Of course, the Jays had kind of a down year last year, but they brought up a lot of those young guys, Vlad Jr., Bo Bichette, among others on that Blue Jay team last year. And whenever the season gets played, they have a chance to compete and get back to the playoffs in 2020. But here is our Blue Jays crossover episode.
Yeah, just like the Orioles pitching staff. What is that aside from John Means?
Well, you know what? Let's start it right there then. What is the Orioles pitching staff besides John Means? Well, that is a good question. It's John Means. He'll start opening day. It is Alex Cobb, probably number two. It's Asher Wojciechowski, number three. And then there's a lot of questions after that. And Connor Newcomb, AJ Andrews here as we start our crossover Blue Jays and Orioles episode here on the Locked On Podcast Network with a good question, because I think it's something that Orioles fans are trying to figure out as well.
Well, I think a lot of people are trying to figure that out. I mean, I'm the outsider when it comes to the Orioles, but I do know Asher Wojciechowski as a former Blue Jays draft pick who never panned out. And I know he had a little good run of form last year near the end there. I loved seeing him take on the Red Sox the way he did. That was fun. But yeah, it seems like, again, what do you guys, is Wade LeBlanc your number four?
Is
that a thing?
I would probably say yes, Wade LeBlanc. I mean, it's not certain he'll have a rotation spot, but it's looking like that's going to be the case. And then number five, I mean, Blue Jay fans may remember David Hess from very early in the season last year. He threw six innings about that, no hit, and then Brandon Hyde pulled him from the game and yeah. Said afterwards, you know, he's still a prospect, I guess, and we're working him into it and didn't want to leave him in too long. And I believe Pedro Araujo came in and gave up like a hit and a homer to the very next two batters.
I could not believe y'all did that. Like, I know he's a prospect, but I mean, that's exactly who the Blue Jays have had problems with for like years. These random guys who just come up and just, they don't know how to handle it. Like, this guy didn't exist a day ago. How do we handle this guy? So I could not believe y'all did that.
And Blue Jays fans would love to know that David Hess went on from that six and whatever it was, no hit, to put up a less than stellar 2019 season, in which he had a 7.09 ERA in 80 innings last year. So that first start was not indicative of what was going to happen for the rest of the year.
You know what, Connor? I didn't think you could make me, you know, appreciate Edwin Jackson, and yet somehow you just did.
Edwin Jackson's pretty much played for every team, and he's his last couple years, he hasn't gotten many people out, but he's still pitching in the big leagues. But
you didn't get anyone out last year. That was the problem.
So the Orioles have definitely some questions, but you turn it around on the Blue Jays side, you know, there's been some guys you could really pencil in for them the past couple years in the starting rotation, Estrada, Happ, and Sanchez, all those guys gone at the moment. So what does their rotation look like going into 2020?
Well, opposed to last year when it was like the stalwarts, it was Stroman, Aaron Sanchez, and then a lot of shrugging, just like, I don't know. Can Matt Shoemaker stay healthy? The answer was no. Can Clay Buchholz repeat what he did in Arizona? The answer was no. Can they get anything of value out of Clayton Richard? Once again, the answer was no. And that's why they had a 90-plus loss season last year, because they got absolutely nothing from the starters. And it says something that only one of them right now is ticketed to be in the rotation this year, and that would be innings leader Trent Thornton, which is a phrase I did not think I would be saying at this point last year. But obviously, heading into the offseason, the Blue Jays went into it with the prime directive being starting pitching. We need all of it. So they go and trade for Chase Anderson. They go and sign Tanner Roark. They go and sign Hyunjin Ryu. And with Matt Shoemaker coming back and looking really good in his first spring training start, 2 2/3 scoreless innings, you can almost see a major league rotation in Toronto again. And like you said, we haven't had that since, you know, you can pencil in Happ, Estrada, Stroman, Sanchez, no problem. So at the very least, this season, it looks like we're going to be heading into opening day with a rotation set. Now, there are injury questions about three of those four guys I mentioned. So it's very possible that two of them start on the IL, and we're looking at Shun Yamaguchi and Anthony Kay in the opening day starting rotation, which, based on spring results, not great. So it's looking better than it did. We can say that. There's tangible belief it will be better, which is all you can really ask for the Blue Jays after last season.
And I think that's a fair look at it. And listen, they went out and they got some somewhat veteran guys who've been around the block. I mean, Ryu at one point was looking at maybe trying to pick up a Cy Young over the past couple of years, and he's been really good in LA, and he might be the ace of that staff to start the season. But, you know, they get some veterans in the rotation, but if you look at the lineup, it kind of feels like 2020. This is the year where the Blue Jays are going to kind of show it all off, and all the kids are going to be in the starting nine this year.
It is looking very tantalizing, Connor. I mean, last year was obviously like the get-to-know period for a lot of these prospects when Vladdy was brought up in May, Kevin Biggio was brought up in June, Bo Bichette in July. You started to get a look at these guys, and now you're going to get to see them for a full season. And not only that, you're starting to see like potential bounce back. I was talking with MLB.com writer Keegan Matheson last week, and one of the guys we were talking about very heavily was Danny Jansen, who after his 2018 debut, everyone's like, oh, Danny, he's going to be one of the top hitting catchers in the American League. And then he went out and hit like 160 for the first 2 months and just kind of killed any buzz of that kind of step forward season. But you look at him in the spring now and he's looking really good. Like he's changed his stance a bit. He's getting more power out of his legs. And if you can have Jansen make that leap and be a consistent offensive threat, then the Blue Jays can put out a lineup where you have to think about like the 1-7 hitters. And when you have a lineup that doesn't allow for a breather, you know, like the Yankees had with their lineup at DEF the past couple seasons, or with the Astros when, you know, they weren't having the earmuffs on because of the garbage cans. Like when you can consistently wear pitchers out like that, that means you're going to get, you know, more hittable pitches, and the more hittable pitches you see, the more success you're going to have. So there's a lot of excitement there that this team can, you know, almost recreate those 2015, 2016 lineups where you had to be on your game throughout the lineup. You could not take a break.
And kind of looking at Toronto's young guys who are here, this is kind of what the Orioles, I think, are hoping is their case maybe in 2022, maybe. They feel like a Blue Jays 2020. I mean, but this year, though, for Baltimore, the prospects may not be quite ready. Actually, it could kind of be this year where it was similar to last year for Toronto, where they kind of bring him up and show him off for 30, 40 games. Obviously, Vlad got a lot more time at the big league level, but some of these guys with the Orioles, you know, Ryan Mountcastle is someone who Blue Jays fans are going to get to know because he's probably going to be penciled in the Orioles lineup every day for a long time. They hope he top five prospect who's going to play some first base, some left field, some DHing. He was the MVP of the International League at AAA last year, hit a lot of home runs, and he should be on the big league club this year, prospect wise. But for the Orioles, you know, all the prospects still aren't quite there yet. So Blue Jay fans, you know, in those 19 games, you're going to see the Orioles. You're still going to see a lot of guys and go, wow, he's on the Orioles now. Or wow, who's that hitting fifth for Baltimore and playing third base? And some Orioles fans might be asking the same exact question. So that's some of the kind of things you're going to see this year.
Yeah, just like, when did you get Jose Iglesias? I forgot about him.
Exactly.
I did want to ask about that because, you know, when you think of the Orioles, you do think of these guys like Adley Rutschman, who I don't know if we're going to see him this season, but another like highly touted prospect who seems to be on the verge of breaking out and making that debut. Is this a year you start to bring him up and give him that taste of Major League Baseball, or do you think they're just content to go through the season?
Do you hate stepping on the scale? Maybe it's because you haven't met the right one. A company called Withings produced the world's first smart scale, and they are still the best. In fact, Tom's Guide rated Withings Body Plus the best overall smart scale in 2020. If you're looking to lose weight, willpower is key, but so is having the right tools. Withings Smart Scales are known for durability and an exceptional user-friendly design. Step on and data from every weigh-in syncs automatically to the free app for iOS and Android via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Lots of smart scales don't have the Wi-Fi option, and it means you need to have your phone on you. But Withings Body Plus gives weight, full body composition, weight trend, even a local weather report. The scale can support up to 8 users and even know who is who. So here's the deal. You can get 25% off a Withings Body Plus right now at withings.com for a very limited time. Go to withings.com, that's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off Body Plus Body Composition Scale. That's withings.com/MLB. to get 25% off Body Plus Body Composition Scale. Yeah, Rutschman's interesting. Obviously, he was the number one overall pick, and he's a little older because he was a 3-year college player. And he, you know, played in the Pac-12. He won a college baseball national championship at Oregon State, so he's had a lot of at bats and a lot of high pressure moments, even in college. And he'll probably start this year in Double A. I don't see him coming to the big leagues at all this year, but I could see Adley Rutschman as an opening day roster guy in 2021, potentially for the Orioles. He might have the skills potentially to be up with the O's at the end of this year. I just think maybe it's not worth it. I mean, it would still, because he's a 2019 draft pick, I mean, you probably want to give him at least one full season where he plays beginning to end in the minor leagues, which would be this year. And then you probably think about bringing him up next year. And obviously, he's the Orioles' number one prospect. He was the number one pick. And a lot of things are kind of riding on his shoulders. He's been in big league spring training camp so far the last few weeks. And he just got his first hit. So things are starting to look up. But he won't be on the big league roster this year, I don't think. But Blue Jays fans should to look to see him catching for the Orioles pretty much every day, probably starting in 2021. And that's kind of the thing where I talk about how, you know, they're a couple years behind the Blue Jays, just those guys aren't quite ready yet, whereas for Toronto the guys are pretty much ready to go.
Yeah. I one other guy I want to ask about who people might think is ready to go is Austin Hayes. Now I do play fantasy baseball, but as a policy of myself, I try to avoid other AL East teams, and that's no offense to the Orioles and stuff. I just don't like having conflicting interests when I, you know, follow my baseball. But Hayes is a guy who's getting a lot of attention as a kind of breakout possibility. Do you see that? Do you think he can build on what was a fairly successful stint last season? I mean, he batted 309. He's shown he can make good contact with the bat and with the wall, as we saw against the Blue Jays. But is this year a guy like him can take a step forward and really establish himself as a cornerstone guy for the future?
Yeah, Austin Hayes, definitely not a guy who's afraid of the wall in the outfield. He made some spectacular plays at the end of last season. He came up and played in 21 games with the Orioles last year. Hayes is kind of interesting because he was up for 20 games back in 2017. He was a September call-up, and the thought was, okay, he got his feet wet, and now he's going to be a guy in the lineup in 2018. Well, then he got injured, and he didn't really hit at all in spring training, and that whole process kind of stopped, and he didn't get back to the big leagues till late 2019. But as you said, he hit 309 last year. He had four home runs and just 75 plate appearances to go along with six doubles at the end of the year, made some spectacular plays. He's going to be the Orioles opening day center fielder here in 2020, and he should be in that lineup every day. He was, you know, his plan back in 2017 when he came up, he was looking like the predecessor to Adam Jones. And at one point they were talking about moving Adam Jones to right field for Austin Hayes. It ended up happening that Adam Jones moved to right field the next year for Cedric Mullins, who is a center field prospect who hasn't worked out as well. But for Austin Hayes, looks like he's going to be the guy this year in center field. And really, Mountcastle, who I mentioned earlier, and then Austin Hayes, those are the two guys hitting prospects-wise who really haven't gotten either much time at all in the big leagues like Hayes or none at all like Mountcastle, who will be big parts of the Orioles team in 2020.
Interesting. So let me ask you this, and at the risk of sounding like a horrible person, what are you looking for from the Orioles in 2020? Are you looking for like a 60 win mark, or like what would you consider a successful season for the Orioles in 2020?
I think success number one is nobody, especially who would still be a trade chip, aka Trey Mancini, potentially sustains a big injury. That would be good to avoid that at all costs.
Can I say I wish Trey Mancini all the best of health, and hopefully he gets traded out of the division sooner rather than later. Yeah, unless you want to send him to Toronto, in which case, true. Heck yeah.
He would fit right in the middle of that lineup with all those guys, and that team would get even scarier going down the line.
Have you seen our first base competition? Trey Mancini would blow that out of the water, and I would love it.
Is Travis Shaw not going to lock that down with his like 120 batting average he had last year?
Yeah, that's the thing. So far in spring training, Travis Shaw has looked more like 2019 Travis Shaw as opposed to 2018 Travis Shaw. And I know, small sample size in spring training, but I was never as convinced as other people. Like, it should have been Travis Shaw's, like he should have been given the first base job from the get-go when Rowdy Tellez was still there. But Rowdy hasn't done much either. So first base is still going to be a sore spot for the Blue Jays. And if Shaw doesn't work out and Tellez can't cut down on the strikeouts and be a more effective batter at the plate, then you start to wonder if the Blue Jays start using some of their prospect capital that they have. I mean, they have like 9 starting pitchers at AAA. You're telling me that Baltimore can't use one or two and just flip us Trey Mancini?
Well, I could even interest you in a first baseman who once hit 53 home runs in a season. His name is Chris Davis, and he could be available.
Yeah, no. I will quickly swipe left on that.
He could be available for the right price, which would be any price at all. But
is Baltimore going to eat 95% of his salary? Because
at this point, if someone offered something for Chris Davis, I think they might just do that just to get anything for him at this point. But he's hitting a little bit in spring training, so you never know. But to answer your question about the Orioles and what the expectations are, they won 54 games last year, obviously, second worst record in the big leagues. I think the hope is, you know, it'd be cool to win more games. They won 47 in 2018 up to 54. Maybe if they can get up around 60, it'd be nice to avoid 100 losses. So maybe you shoot for 63 wins. That number just looks a lot better. On the other hand, Spencer Torkelson, who is a college baseball player who is just hitting all the home runs right now, I would love to have him in an Oreo uniform, which means I'd like for the O's to stay in the top two of the draft.
I don't know. I think he's in this year's draft, and I know I've seen Blue Jays sites online being like, oh, what if Spencer Torkelson falls to us at number five? And
I don't think he's falling.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Dude can just mash.
And like, you're right about that. I actually misspoke. Torkelson, I'm hoping the Orioles get this year. The guy I want them to get next year is Kumar Rocker, a starting pitcher from Vanderbilt, who struck out 19 in a no-hitter against Duke in the NCAA tournament last year. So he might be the number one pick. It would be nice to get him. But for the Orioles, stay healthy. Maybe try to pull off a trade or two at the deadline. They don't have a whole lot of pieces. And get a couple more prospects into the system. Maybe you go for 60 wins, but it's going to be another, we'll say, down year for Baltimore. But to flip it to you for Toronto, obviously, as you said, they're coming off of a 95 loss season. But now with these guys, you know, all the young guys up at the big league level, they get some veteran pitching. Is the sentiment that they can compete for the postseason this year, or is it, let's try to get back towards 500 and then maybe next year they go for it?
See, now this is where it gets interesting, because there is some division in Blue Jays land when it comes to this. Because I know some people are being a lot more tempered with their expectations, just like if they can increase it to like 75, 79 wins, that puts them in position to hopefully compete in 2021. I am a little more bullish on Toronto's ability this season for reasons we have discussed already. You know, the Babs are going to have a full season in the league, and they were a 500 team in September last year against a schedule that included the Yankees and the cheating Astros and the Braves. And like it, there were a lot of, you know, really tough games that they acquitted themselves very well in. So that gives me hope that moving forward, they can take that and build on it. And if they have any kind of luck with their pitching staff being healthy and already, you know, one of their top relievers, Rafael Dolis, had an appendectomy today. So that already tells you where the health is going with this club. But if they can get even 120 starts out of their projected top five starters, which would be Ryu, Roark, Shoemaker, Anderson, and Trent Thornton at this point, if they can get 120 starts out of those guys and the batters continue their progression, there is absolutely no reason they can't be playing meaningful baseball games in September, especially considering they're going to get, what, like 14 wins off the Red Sox this season. The Red Sox look really bad. I'm sorry, Gabrielle, but they look terrible when I watch them.
And especially just, that they might not have Chris Sale for a while and potentially the whole season if it goes poorly. And
yeah,
the Red Sox are already losing players. If they don't have Chris Sale this year, the Orioles might be fighting them for fourth.
Yeah, when you're like, hey, Martin Perez, we want you to make 30 starts for us, that's not a good sign. At all, like it between. Okay, I'm sorry, Connor, but I'm lumping your Orioles in with the Red Sox in this case. But
that's okay. I'll take it. They won the World Series 2 years ago. I'll gladly be lumped in.
There you go. But you take the fact that you're looking at hopefully 25 wins right there from those two teams. If you can hold like the Rays to a 500 record and you can hold the Yankees to a 500 record, that'll set you at 40, 45 to start. Then you take care of business against the really bad teams, your Mariners, your Tigers, your Royals. And then again, just be competitive with the other ones. I don't see the playoffs happening for the Blue Jays, but I do see a 500 season. I see like 82 and 80 for the Blue Jays. With a little luck, they can compete for the playoffs. But ultimately, I see them like the Diamondbacks from last season or something like that. A team that's able to hang around a little bit, but ultimately will fall short. But it will set them up nicely for 2021 to get back into the postseason and, you know, again, hopefully not get screwed by sign-stealing teams.
Well, AJ, one last thing I've got for you that I think Orioles fans do want to know about the Blue Jays this year. So these four guys kind of get lumped in together, I think, because they're all related to, you know, either their parents or siblings who are also Major League Baseball players. But mm-hmm. Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, Vlad Guerrero Jr., and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., one of those four is 100% certainly locked to be a complete Orioles killer throughout his career. So which one of those four will it be who's hitting about six home runs every year at Camden Yards?
I actually think it's going to be Bo Bichette, just because it would be easy to say like Vladdy's a lock to hit those six home runs. But if you want someone who's going to be a thorn in your side, like consistently, I think Bo has the best chance, just because, you know, he has all the tools to do that. He, like you remember, Connor, how much of a pain in the butt Derek Jeter was to face, right?
Oh, I know.
Yeah. So Bichette is more likely to be a Derek Jeter type. Like, I'm obviously not saying Bo Bichette's going to hit 3,000 hits in his career, but he strikes me as having that comp more easily than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. compared to like Josh Donaldson. So if I had to pick immediately, I would say Bo, but know that you're probably going to hate the lot of them. So.
And they're going to get a lot of hits, we all know, and one of them. Because there's one guy on every team in your division that's always a killer of your team. So I figured it would be one of those guys. But for the Blue Jays this year.
That's why I want Trey Mancini, so you don't have the Blue Jays killer anymore.
There you go. If the Orioles do...
He's just always lights us up.
If the Orioles do trade Trey Mancini, that offense becomes... very, very questionable through the second half of the season. So we'll see if Mancini's an Oriole throughout the 2020 year. But AJ, a good crossover here for both of the Blue Jays and the Orioles fans, kind of learning about each other. And, you know, the two of them were at times both punching bags in the AL East. At least one team should be making a step forward in 2020. And hopefully they can help maybe turn the Red Sox into a punching bag. That could be one good thing to come out of this as well.
So again, our thanks to AJ Andrews from Locked On Blue Jays for joining us as we did our final crossover episode in the AL East. Again, apologies yesterday, no episode. We had a little bit of technical difficulties with our Red Sox episode, and we will try to get you that episode at some point to kind of finish off the AL East crossovers. But remember, coming up, we've got some Orioles rewatch episodes. Actually, next week, that'll be early next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, probably two of those days. We will get you an Orioles rewatch episode. Matthew Pine will join us from Utah Street Report, and he comes on as the two of us went back and watched the 2012 AL wildcard game. And we're going to do a little rewatch pod, probably split up into two episodes, just kind of going through that game. We went back and watched the whole thing. It's on YouTube if you want to go find it and watch it. We will post the link to YouTube to watch the full game without commercials as well. And if you want to go back and watch and then listen along kind of to the podcast as we broke down that game as some happier moments in Orioles history. Besides that, we also have our greatest Oriole of all time bracket going on, and the voting continues on Twitter. You can go to vote at our Twitter account, at Locked On Orioles, to cast your vote. And today, Friday, is the final day of first round voting. And we have what should be some of our closest first round matchups for a couple of them. Doug DeCenzis versus Mike Bordick is our 6 versus 11 seeds. Frank Robinson versus Stu Miller. Then we have Don Buford versus J.J. Hardy and Mark Belanger versus Don Baylor in our final first round matchups today. Now, those things could change today. There could be a couple upsets, but throughout the rest of the bracket, all chalk, all the better seeds except for 1 9-seed Mike Cuellar beating 8-seed Mike Boddicker all the way back on the first day of voting. It's the only upset in the first round so far. Once we get through this first round, we will reveal the entire bracket kind of in its entirety for you so you can fill one out yourself. We'll post that on Twitter for you. You can head over to Locked On Orioles to find that probably tomorrow after we're done with the first round. And then on Saturday, we will continue into the second round of voting, the round of 32. So we might start to see some upsets there. So make sure to head over to Twitter at Locked On Orioles and get your votes in for the greatest Oriole of all time bracket. And we will continue with those second round matchups tomorrow, which will pick guys like Cal Ripken against Mike Cuellar, Brian Roberts versus Nick Markakis, Rick Dempsey versus Boog Powell, and Davey Johnson versus Bobby Gritch on our first day of second round matchups. But remember, today the voting concludes the first round. So that's it for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did and you haven't already, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you are listening right now. Give us a rating and a review if you can. It really helps out the pod. So we will be back on Monday with a little 2012 AL Wildcard Game rewatch episode. And the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.